weekly podcast of the Concordia Bible Institute, housed on the campus of Concordia University, Wisconsin. This is your opportunity every week to read, mark, learn, and take to heart the sacred scriptures with Dr. John Seleska, director of the Concordia Bible Institute, and me, your host and fellow learner, Dr. John Oberdeck, professor of theology and coordinator for lay studies at CUW. Now, we have been working our way through the book of Genesis, and today we are at chapter 29. Jacob is the story we're dealing with. He's the main character. But you have some things that you'd like to introduce for us before we get into what's happening in chapter 29.
A kind of preliminary, because you recall that he had been sent there in chapter 28, the first verses there, that Jacob had been sent there to the household of Bethuel and to your mother's brother Laman. And then Isaac says to Jacob, take a wife of the daughters of Laban. Now, that would be a cousin.
Uh-huh.
Well, it seems to me to be very interesting when you look back. Abraham married a first cousin. Isaac married a first cousin. And now Jacob is going to marry a first cousin. Were there no restrictions in the Old Testament about marital relationships, close marital relationships? I know we have them here. There are restrictions in America where I think there's a law against marrying a first cousin.
I believe you're correct there, and the term that's used there is consanguinity.
Yes.
Now, I know from your reading of Luther, you'd know that he actually has an essay on the degrees of consanguinity.
He does.
That is, you know, how close can you be before it's a no-no to marry someone?
Well, evidently, in the Bible, sisters, because...
Mm-hmm. And also, we're in the early stages of time, for example, but also the promise that's being given. So would you say that perhaps there was less of a problem with this because at that time they're establishing the messianic line?
Well, I would think that would be the case because after the 12 sons are born and... they have to go down to Egypt and are there for 430 years, that still they remain pure. Now, sure, okay. There was intermarrying among the tribes, but the tribes remained separate and sort of segregated. And, of course, you can't do that anymore today. We don't know of a nation Israel as we know of it in the Old Testament, but it is interesting that they seem to separate and to segregate themselves, and I think because of that whole promise of the Messiah, the messianic concept, if they did not, how could you identify the Messiah from coming from a specific tribe unless you had a record of that? So I assume that to some degree at least you're right, that that's probably the intent of his marrying into this family.
Mm-hmm. Well, for those of you listening, that is the word for today to add to your vocabulary, the word consanguinity, which is the degrees of distance for marriage.
And I'm not real sure how far it is here. I know first cousins are forbidden, but I'm not real sure about second cousins. I think that might be permissible, but I'm not up on that sort of thing, so I'm not real sure about it. But
okay.
There are restrictions, and to some degree it is because of the fact that if the relationship, if there's inbreeding, too much of that, that some of the defects and some of the very awful defects sometimes are magnified under those conditions, and the country has simply insisted that that would not be a good thing for the culture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So chapter 29 begins. Then Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east. As he looked, he saw a well in the field, and behold, three flocks of sheep lying beside it. And then what happens?
Yes, he approaches, of course, and he speaks to the shepherds there as brethren. And he asks them, of course, if they know Laban. And they say they do. And then he asks, is he in good health? They said, yes, he is. And here comes his daughter. And wouldn't you know it, that Rachel would appear with the sheep that she was entrusted with. Again, she was a shepherdess. And she was a servant to her mother and her father. She took care of the sheep. And then it says simply that they discussed this idea of watering the sheep. There evidently was a great stone that they would roll in front of the well or over the well. I'm not real sure if exactly how that... I don't know the mechanics of it, as a matter of fact. I tried to find out a little bit of information on it, but was not able to. But there was a stone evidently over it, and it would require some strength to be able to move that stone. But the shepherds said they would not do it until all the flocks were gathered, so that I guess none of the water would be wasted. And then they would open the thing, and that everybody's flocks could drink. But she came, and Jacob opened it for her, the well, and then he watered her flocks for her. And then when she explained to him who she was, and he to her who he was, and they realized that they were related, it says that he embraced her and wept. He had found the right place. The Lord had led him exactly to the right place. It must have been in the back of his mind. I don't know where exactly they live. Will I be able to find them? Well, in questioning those shepherds, he was able to locate where his relatives lived, that there she was. And I imagine that she must have really caught his eye immediately. Mm-hmm. Because not long afterwards, about a month later, he knows who he wants to marry. He'd come for that purpose. And he knows who it's going to be. Well, then she, of course, naturally would run to talk with her brother about the fact that Jacob had come, Laban's sister's son. And I assume that she told him a little bit of the story as well as he told his part of the story, and that they would interact with each other. And Jacob begins to work for Laban. Laban accepts him in and begins to work for him for about a month. And since it seemed that he was going to be a permanent resident, Laban says to him, well, it's not right that you should work for me for nothing. What would your wages be if you remain? Because I think the Lord is going to bless me as a consequence of your presence here. Well, immediately, Jacob insists that he's willing to work, and not only to work, but to work hard, and for 7 years. He even sets a limit. He said, I'll work for 7 years for your daughter, Rachel. So he really must have been smitten by this lady. Now, we don't really know how old she was. Now, Luther says, I didn't check this mathematically, but I'm sure he did. But he says that when Jacob left, that he was already in his mid-70s. Now, he lived to be 147, so he would have been midlife.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't say, but my guess is, of course, that Rachel was younger than he. But you have to ask yourself the question, they must have been interacting, and that she must have been willing because he asked for her, and Laban agrees. I don't know if she had any word at all of assent that she would have to make to this kind of arrangement, but evidently not, because we're going to see later this whole deception.
Yes, now we come in because we haven't even mentioned Leah yet.
No, we haven't.
No, because Rachel is the younger sister, mm-hmm. and the older sister is Leah.
Leah.
And there's an interesting thing that it says about Leah in there. It says that Leah's eyes were weak. It says, now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful in form and appearance.
Yeah, that's why I say she must have caught his eye immediately.
Well, Rachel did, yes.
Yes, but, and now Leah, word is an interesting word in the Hebrew, and it means a lot of things. I suppose this idea of weak eyes, perhaps she squinted? Is that, in some way it must have distracted from any beauty that she might have had. In other words, it may have, we don't know, but it can also mean eyes that sparkled. Now, some translations, as a matter of fact, I looked at a number of translations,
really?
And a number of them use the word sparkle. Well, that's quite different from weak eyes
to sparkly eyes. You think sparkly eyes might be an advantage, somebody.
Right, but weak eyes might mean that she just really would have to go slowly, move slowly, would not be able to accomplish a lot of tasks that you could with good vision. So
Well, the contrast in the verse is between Leah's weak eyes and Rachel's beautiful.
Right, the beauty.
And then you think, well, maybe it was something simply about her appearance that she just wasn't as stunning as Rachel.
Must not have been attractive. But then he probably had made up his mind immediately when he saw her at the watering hole.
Rachel.
He must have made up his mind already because he embraces her. And it's almost as if, well, this is going to be a pretty good deal. The whole thing is working out better than I might have imagined with this one. And then he asks for her, and of course, it says that he worked for 7 years, and they seemed like just a few days for the love with which he had for her. So she must have been a very lovely little girl.
Uh-huh. And, well, 7 years... And given the age of marriage, she must have been quite young when they met.
I would guess.
Yeah.
I would guess that she was.
And so that's, that by the end of the 7 years, then she was no doubt of marriageable age.
It's interesting, though, that she seems not to have been able to dissent if she didn't want to marry an older man.
Uh-huh.
And my guess is that as they grew together, that she realized that this man had a lot of possibilities. And she certainly must have realized that he was, quote, we would say, a good, solid Christian man who was very religious in the way in which he approached life. And perhaps that was one of the attractive features for her. Only guessing, of course, but something had to attract her to him also, because she was more than willing to marry him.
And that we have to be careful about imposing too much of our own concept of what constitutes a good marriage back into biblical times. It didn't have to have the romantic qualities that we might consider so important today. It's more of an arrangement. Parents are involved. It's something that's going to be beneficial to both families as the arrangements are made for a match or for a wedding.
And in this instance, also the Messiah, the messianic concept is involved with
true.
The seed. And I'm, wouldn't you say that he would have indicated this also, Jacob, when he came, that he would really, or they must have known about that from Abraham. So all of that perhaps played a part
So that Rachel would be aware that this is the fellow who's got the promise.
Mm-hmm. She ain't going to... She ain't going to be the one, but he could have imagined that it's going to be me.
Uh-huh. Well, that's right, because the promise never does go through Rachel, does
it? No, it goes through Leah and
Judah. It goes through Leah.
Uh-huh. So that's interesting also.
Well, that gets us back to how come it goes through Leah. Well, then we get to the wedding night, seven years of service.
Yeah.
It's the wedding night, and
this very interesting
how do we explain this?
To us, this is very, very interesting. It does show, of course, what Uncle Laban was all about. He was not as nice a man as you might have expected when he offered his daughter.
Yeah,
and
so there must have been, as part of the wedding dress, so to speak, in terms of everything you should wear, some pretty heavy makeup or something. Because as the story unfolds, the next morning, Jacob wakes up with Leah, not Rachel.
Well, we perhaps ought to explain that this happened because... Well, as Laban explains the next day when Jacob is amazed at what had happened, that he didn't get the wife that he expected, Rachel, but that he got Leah, then Laban tries to explain, well, it's not the custom among our people that the younger should marry before the elder. And so we had to work another 7 years, give her the week... of the honeymoon, we might say, and then you can have Rachel also. And of course he agrees to it, but he realizes he's been had, and he realizes also that a deception which he himself worked has now been perpetrated on him.
So does he wait another 7 years before marrying Rachel, or does...
Just a week.
Just a week.
Yeah, okay. He gives him 7 days. After a week, then he gets to marry Rachel also. And I'm suggesting that when they had these wedding ceremonies, as was very customary in the Old Testament, it wasn't just for one day the way we might do it, or even less than a day, but that they would celebrate for days. And that eventually, of course, there would be wine drinking and a lot of imbibing, so that a lot of things might have transpired that would have created the effect in the tenth later on with Leah and Jacob. That's only a guess
so
again.
That right. We don't have that particular detail, but that would be a reasonable explanation in terms of how Jacob could have been deceived on his wedding night. Well, the result of that deception in terms of Jacob's family life, we're going to get to after the break. But right now, let me take some time to ask you a question. What do you find most valuable in higher education? How would you prioritize all the knowledge to be gained at an institution of higher learning? Concordia University, Wisconsin, located on the shores of Lake Michigan in Mequon, Wisconsin, just north of Milwaukee, is an institution that is committed to excellence in learning, but at the same time realizes that excellence isn't enough without development in vocation. You see, we want our students to know that there's a reason for them to learn the things that they're learning, and the reason isn't always simply for their own benefit, for their own career, but that what they learn is to be put to use for the benefit of their neighbor. And in fact, that's the understanding we have of vocation. The mission statement of Concordia puts it this way. Concordia University, Wisconsin is a Lutheran higher education community committed to helping students develop in mind, body, and spirit for service to Christ in the church and the world. You can learn more about the over 60 programs here at Concordia by visiting the website www.cuw.edu. And if you find yourself benefiting from our Christ in Every Word podcasts, I encourage you to support this ministry by mentioning it to others and by offering your monetary support. Concordia University graciously houses the Institute, but is unable to support the operational functions. You can support Christ in Every Word by going to our website, www.concordiabible.org, and click on the contribute page. You'll find several ways in which you can support the message of Christ in Every Word. And now in just a moment, we'll be back with the next episode in the life of Jacob, son of Isaac. Welcome back to Christ in Every Word. We are in Genesis chapter 29 today, and we're talking about the marriage ceremony of Jacob, which went awry from his initial expectations.
Very much so. And it's interesting, is it not, that when you consider a marriage as God intended it in the garden before the fall, one man, one woman, Adam and Eve, and how quickly, I'm sure, that man befouled the whole thing with different ideas about marriage, and that later on, again, after the flood, by the way, one man, one woman, Noah, his wife, his sons, their wives, but it doesn't take long before Abraham has a wife, and then Sarah says, the Lord somehow has prevented me from bearing children. Take my handmaid. And we don't see any sort of dissent from the Lord under these circumstances.
He allows it to take place.
He permits all of this. We impose our own or project our own ideas of marriage also and our culture onto that culture. But it seemed to have been very permissible, not only the way in which this marriage was, quotes, contracted, the deceptiveness of Laban, but also that each of the wives later would offer a handmaid, two handmaids. Each of them offers two handmaids to Jacob to have children. So it emphasizes the importance of children under these circumstances. And when we ask, well, We ought not think of marriage the way we do, and you had mentioned the idea of how romantic it is in our culture, that wasn't perhaps one of the important things there, but rather children were. And the psalmist makes that very clear, that children are a reward from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is his reward. And happy is the man that has his quiver full of them.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to understand there is a difference, and we... we might find it very difficult to comprehend what's going on here.
Even so, the Lord certainly has allowed this to take place in the life of Jacob, but it doesn't bring a great deal of joy in terms of harmonious household family relationships.
Same was true with Abraham, wasn't it?
Yes, I mean, it was.
It was the same way with Abraham and Hagar and Ishmael. The whole thing got out of hand almost, and the same would be true here, the wives fighting.
Yeah, and again, that to me is so interesting because the sacred scriptures that we have as Christians never seem to gloss over the propensity we have to bring sin into our lives. They never try and say, okay, here's the patriarchs, be like them, they were holy in their lives, they never erred, be like them. No, when it pictures the patriarchs for them, it describes them as individuals who have some severe limitations and tremendous weaknesses.
Now, all this,
they are in need of forgiveness,
very much so, right?
And that way we can relate to them.
It is interesting, as you say, that you would think, I think from any human perspective, that this would be covered over and that they would try to cover up some of these events, like with David, murder and adultery. I mean, this great king, the one from whom the Messiah would come, that he would commit murder, that he would commit adultery. This seems unthinkable, and yet that's not covered up at all. None of it is, and none of this is either.
And we still recite the Psalms that he wrote.
With great joy, we? Yes. And, a great admiration for the man. And as a matter of fact, the Jews didn't seem to hold that against him at any point. They always remembered who this great king was and what the Messiah would be like if, from their point of view, when Messiah came, he would be a king like David.
But the king would always, well, then the king was one who had also received forgiveness. He wasn't above forgiveness. So there was a need for a Messiah who would bring righteousness for David just as well as for the people.
We had to know that that happened in David's case because later on it is said about David in 1 Kings, and I don't recall the chapter exactly, but it says that David kept all my commandments and followed me with his whole heart. And you think, well, wait a minute.
Wait a second. Where was that in Scripture?
Yeah, it's in Kings.
Oh,
there's a statement made about David that he followed me with all his heart and kept all my commandments. And you think, you're kidding. But I'm sure intends to portray the idea that David was forgiven and that God saw him this way.
Okay.
It's the same way he looks at us. He sees us the same way. And surely he saw Jacob and his wives and Laban
through the righteousness of Jesus Christ.
Right.
So David's experiencing the same kind of forgiveness that we receive.
We know he had to.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, now this thing develops into a very, very fascinating family affair.
So
it doesn't go into a whole lot of detail after this, except to say now he's married both to Rachel and to Leah. And you have to ask this question about Leah. What were her thoughts? Now, she's part of this deception. Wouldn't this be humiliating? I mean, to any woman from our point of view, this would simply be humiliating. He doesn't want me as his wife. He hasn't asked for me. He's asked for my beautiful sister, whom I've had to take a back seat to all my life because of her beauty. No.
Now it's happening again, and I'll never be rid of this problem.
No, it's demeaning. I mean, that's how we would consider it, but evidently not.
Well, this might be a good place to mention that at the end of all things here, Jacob winds up with 12 sons and one daughter.
Yes.
From Leah and Rachel and their two servants.
Right. Now, that's how this thing develops. Well, I'd like to comment for a few moments on both of these wives to get at their spirituality. I do really think that Leah was the stronger Christian, the stronger believer. If you look at the naming of the children, All the names have to do, in one way or another, with a kind of a relationship from the Lord to her. But then she gets to Judah. I think he's number four. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. Now I will praise the Lord. I mean, that's what the name means. But I don't know if you've ever heard of one of Luther's favorite French authors, exegetes really, Nicholas de Lyra. But he makes this statement about Judah. He calls the word confessor. Now I will confess the Lord. That this is really what Leah is saying when she gives birth to Judah. So he concludes, she is really the strong Christian and not Rachel. Now, you might think the other, but if you consider the circumstances which will develop, we won't get at all of that today, but when they leave home, Rachel takes the household images, the household gods, and hides them. Now, why did she take those? Why were they so important to her? It does
those are
say,
her father's images,
yes,
right? Laban's.
Yes,
yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes, these household images. What was that all about? Well, you have to conclude that they had some significance, some spiritual significance.
And if they had spiritual significance, then there was a problem of having an idol.
Right.
Something other than the true God.
Right. And later on, Jacob realizes he didn't clean things up when Laban came, and he was furious about the fact that someone had taken his household images and he couldn't find them. Well, we'll have to go into that at a later time. But Jacob at that point should have been a good husband and a good father and cleaned up the household of those images, but he does not until much later. I think we'll come across that in about chapter 35, where he's going to take that into his hands and do the right thing. But he should have done that a long time ago. And now, when Jacob makes this statement, Laban comes, and he, of course, is angry about the fact that those household images are gone. And then Jacob makes this statement because he himself is getting a little disturbed about this, because he doesn't believe anyone has taken these household images. Let the one with whom the images are found not live. And then Rachel dies. And then he cleans up the household, perhaps realizing this should have been done a long time ago. This has really been an interference factor in our, we would say, spiritual lives. Now, I'm just taking a few items here and trying to piece them together to find some importance in them, because it's not unimportant when that is mentioned in the scriptures, and how he took great pains finally to rid the house of those household images. Maybe the idea was spreading.
Could have been. Well, in the meantime, let's go back and spend the remaining time we've got today talking about the competition for children.
Yeah.
And the race that takes place once Leah and Rachel are both married to Jacob.
Yeah, we have those four. We mentioned the four. Reuben.
Well, yeah. Yeah, and it seems as if Rachel is barren. Right.
Right.
She's not having any children.
No.
And the Lord keeps blessing Leah one after another.
As a matter of fact, it makes that statement now. Is it verse 35? Somewhere in there where it says, when the Lord saw that Leah was hated.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's how the King James says it.
Verse 31.
31.
Yeah. When the Lord saw that Leah was hated, that's ESV does the same thing. He opened her womb,
yeah,
but Rachel was barren.
Yeah, so obviously the Lord plays a factor in all of this. And was it because of the difference in their spiritual nature and their spiritual makeup? I don't know. But he is saying something with that idea. And then if you look at chapter 30, where she finally gets so upset, Rachel does, because she doesn't have children. Give me children, she says to Jacob. And then Jacob attributes this to the Lord's closing her womb and not permitting her to bear children.
Yeah. And so what does Rachel do? She does the same thing that Sarah had done.
Yeah.
So it's actually Rachel who starts the competition by using handmaidens.
Now you wonder if they hadn't heard the story of Abraham. Don't you think they must have, and that Sarah
that
then...
It didn't work real
it
well?
It didn't work, but that, well, in a sense it worked. I want children no matter what,
okay.
You know. And so she did have a child, although we would say surrogate, I guess,
yeah,
today. I'm
surrogate.
Not sure how this works.
Yeah.
But
Rachel says, "Here is my servant Bilhah. Go into her so that she may give birth on my behalf,
yeah,
that even I may have children through her."
But does it say between my knees? It says that in the King James. This child would be born sort of between my knees. And there evidently was some sort of custom, this surrogate idea, that she would be intimately involved in the birth, Rachel would, although it wouldn't be her child naturally, mm-hmm, that she would be intimately involved in this and that it would be considered her child. Now, and then you have to ask the question about the handmaids. They had no say in this, evidently. They just simply had to bear children, like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is, of course, that they did want to have children, but that they wouldn't have a husband, their own husband. None of that was available to them except, well, again, a husband, quotes, but not a genuine husband who loved them as you would expect a husband to.
So in the competition, Leah has now had Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah.
Yeah.
And at that point now, Bilhah, the servant of Rachel, has Dan and Naphtali.
Yeah.
Or I'm not sure, is that how you pronounce
Naphtali. It? Naphtali. Well, I usually use the King James Version because it has all the markings on them.
Yeah.
So, but they're not really the Hebrew pronunciations that I use, but I'm doing that simply because I'm so accustomed to seeing that. And accustomed to using the King James when I started teaching so that the kids would look at the King James, which that was the only translation available, and we'd be in agreement on the pronunciation. But so Naphtali.
And then at that point, Leah had ceased bearing children, so she wants to keep up it's 4-2 in her favor. Nevertheless, she gives Zilpah, her handmaid, to Jacob. And Zilpah then bears Jacob another son, Gad, and then another one, Asher.
Yeah.
So Gad and Asher are the sons of Zilpah by Jacob.
Now, there's that story of the mandrakes. It's an interesting little story, and I'm not real sure what to make of it. But love apples of some sort. Reuben had come from the field with these mandrakes. Supposedly, I guess, they maybe would increase fertility. I'm only guessing at it because that's what some of the commentators had to say about these, quotes, mandrakes. That's how they're, I don't know how they're translated in your translation.
It says mandrakes.
Yeah, what are those from our point of view? I don't know. Except that there must have been a superstition that whoever possessed these, or if you ate food mixed with these, that it somehow would affect fertilization of eggs and so forth.
Yeah.
That the animals may have used them, and they noticed that animals were more fertile under these circumstances, so they used them themselves, and perhaps it just simply became a custom. Whatever, they believed it. And so in this instance, now there's kind of a bargaining group. Rachel would like to have them. Leah says, "You've taken my husband from me, and now you want to take my son's mandrakes." Now, she believed, I guess, I don't, my husband, but Jacob was really Rachel's husband. I mean, he's the one, he asked for her, so you wonder how Leah came to conclude my husband, but I assume she means because the Lord blessed me with children, and that makes him my husband. You don't have any, Rachel. So I'm a little superior. Maybe she held out her superiority, which you could, I guess, understand.
Maybe so. Anyway, there's some bargaining that goes on. Then Rachel says, "Okay, you can have Jacob
tonight
for the mandrakes."
Yeah.
And okay, so that's the deal that's made. And when Jacob comes in from the field, Leah says, "All right, you're mine for tonight."
Yeah.
And then, out of that, Leah becomes fertile again.
Yeah, right. And you
and
think,
blessed with
does
us.
Jacob have nothing to say about this?
Yeah.
I mean, wait a second.
Apparently
the choice?
Not at
no.
that point. There was enough tension in his household. He's got to do whatever he can to keep these people happy.
I hadn't thought of that, but you're probably right about that. Listen, there's going to be a lot of strife and contention among these people.
And he wouldn't want to make it any worse than it already was.
No, okay, you win.
Yeah, okay, if you bought me with the mandrakes, fine.
Fine.
And then Leah has another son, Issachar, and then also another one, Zebulun.
Zebulun, yeah.
Zebulun.
And at that point, perhaps, I don't know, again, did she use the mandrakes, Rachel? And then she did conceive.
Yeah, because that's what happens next.
Yeah.
Rachel finally has a child, and it winds up being Joseph.
Joseph.
And then again, and it's Benjamin.
Well, that will come a little later. Then she's going to die under those circumstances, if you recall.
In childbirth, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that actually brings us to the end of the competition and actually the end of our time that we've got available. We've really gone over time today.
Ooh.
But just to keep score then, Leah, 6. Bilhah, 2. Zilpah, 2. And
Rachel won.
Rachel won at
but
this
one
point.
But one is coming.
But one is coming.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And we don't want to forget that Leah also then, actually, after the 6 sons, had a daughter.
Had Dinah. Right. Right. One child. That's interesting, is it not?
Yeah.
Only one.
Only one daughter.
Which will create an incident later on. You wonder if there were other daughters, they just were so...
Okay. It doesn't say that there
but
were
But we won't go
daughters.
Into that.
Okay.
But it does seem strange. One daughter
well,
and the rest...
We've got to sign off now.
Okay.
We've gone
we're beyond time.
Okay. I hope you've benefited from Christ in Every Word, and I encourage you to support this ministry. Visit our website, www.concordiabible.org. And until we have time to be together again, find out what happens next in the family of Jacob. God's blessings be yours.